I feel it's important to mention here that my efforts to get Alcatraz to do something in Chapter 8 were not because of some kind of mystical, he's the chosen one type nonsense. That's the sort of thing you'd find in a silly fantasy novel, and not in a completely true account of actual events like this. I had faith in Alcatraz because he'd proven to me that he deserved that faith. Yes, he was a drooling nitwit at the moment, but being a nitwit had never held him back in the past. The drooling part was a bonus feature, like discovering that your sword came with an extra sheath to better match different outfits. We could use him to water potted plants now, for example. Anyway, I trusted him. He was the one who had heard the Scrivener's plans, had read Attica's notes, even just a little bit. If anyone could figure a way out of this mess, it would be him. And I came to that conclusion on my own. There's no such thing as a chosen one. Only people who are put in difficult situations and do their best. I stared down at Alcatraz. I can't say I was surprised, and I also can't say I was angry. Not because I wasn't, but because I'm angry so often that I'm running out of new ways to describe it. Hang on, let me check my thesaurus. I felt apoplectic with wrath. Cha-ching. Idiot. That's not helping.
I'm sorry, Bastille, but if this is my chance to redeem myself
for— Being eaten first is not redemption. Being eaten first is stupid.
It's actually pretty cowardly, because the person who gets eaten second has to watch.
Alcatraz's face fell, like he truly thought he needed to volunteer to watch me be eaten in order to not be a total failure at life. Shattering glass. We did not have time for this. Fine. Enjoy him. I hope he tastes delicious. I turned, picked up my sword and the briefcase of lenses, and marched down the beach, hissing at Alcatraz to stall. I heard the grass rustling as the gag advanced on him. At the very least, this particular gag seemed to enjoy toying with its prey before doing that thing my editor says is far too dark for this book. But in the interest of journalism, I feel I must tell you that gags have a habit of... Well, there. Now you know. Alcatraz did at least seem motivated to stall.
Are you interested in astronomy? I don't want to strong-arm you into anything, but I feel that if we don't adequately get to know each other, it might lead to catastrophe.
I stomped toward the Dragonaut, scanning the craft for anything that might have been left behind. A drinking straw, perhaps. A hat made out of straw. Australia had been on board, and she has very strange taste in clothes. If anything like that had been left behind, the gag had long since removed it.
If you eat us, the world is going to end. Did we mention that?
The gag was a mere 10 feet from Alcatraz now, and Alcatraz had stumbled to his feet and backed up, so his heels were in the surf. The gag had drawn itself up like a cobra and stared down at him as if prepared to strike.
Is that so?
It is. Biblioden, head of the evil librarians, is headed toward the world spire right now, and he's going to use the power of the Incarna to kill everyone. The gag turned and looked out at the world spire. I motioned for Alcatraz to come closer to me and the glass ship. He looked ready to leap into the ocean to get away, but I already knew that wouldn't work. Gags can swim. If they couldn't, how would this one have gotten to the island to begin with? Alcatraz moved slowly up the beach toward me.
Is that him now?
A large, blimp-shaped glass craft hung in the sky near the world spire. It had to be librarian-made. Any free kingdomer would have come up with a more imaginative design. Yes. Yes, it probably is. Alcatraz's shoulders slumped.
That's it, then. We're too late.
As you may have noticed, this was not true, as Alcatraz and I were not yet vapor. And Alcatraz at least had the sense to step up near me, where I might stand a shattering chance of keeping him alive once the distraction stopped. The gag turned back to Alcatraz and scowled at us when it realized we'd moved farther away. We were only a few feet from the main hull of the Dragonaut now, though it wasn't as if we could hide behind it and hope the gag would go away.
Why would he want to destroy the world?
Technically, only the Free Kingdomers will die, but that's your food source, isn't it? After that, you'll have no one to eat.
Harshlanders taste fine. I have a cousin in a lake up in Scotland who does quite well for herself.
Then three things happened at once. First, the gag raised itself up into striking position again, the bulbs of its body pulsing ominously. Second, I whip my sword up across my body in a defensive stance. Third, Alcatraz stumbled backward, tripping over a large glass shard and tearing his sopping wet tuxedo pants. He reached out to keep from falling over and grabbed the base of the Dragonaut's tail. The glass began to glow where he touched it. I stepped between Alcatraz and the Gak. I didn't think I could defeat it, but if it was a choice between fighting it and simply letting it kill Alcatraz, last living heir to the Smedri line and also my friend, I was going to at least make it difficult. Alcatraz, what are you doing?
I have an idea.
This should have been terrible news after his last idea, but I had to admit I found flying across the world preferable to being eaten by a Gak. The Gak reached the apex of its strike pose, and I readied my sword. Ugh! And then I jumped to the side when the pieces of glass dragon beneath my feet started twisting and unearthing themselves from the sand. Gak! A chunk of the Dragonaut's belly emerged. The Gak struck an Alcatraz, but he ducked around the back of the glass dragon, a strategy I had clearly underestimated.
Get in!
What? Alcatraz didn't respond, but through the glass hole I could see he had climbed inside the Dragonaut and was moving toward the engine room. The Gak reared up again and I ducked in through a hole in the Dragonaut's hull just as a wave of energy hummed around me, buzzing through every bit of the glass. I wished I had Grappler's glass boots, because I had a feeling Alcatraz was about to do something crazy. Again. The Gak snaked around the outside of the hull as if it were about to squeeze the Dragonaut to bits.
Alcatraz, the wings have been destroyed. We don't even have an engine. It broke in the crash.
It didn't matter. The glowing energy spread out across the stumps of the Dragonaut's wings, reconstructing them out of pure energy. The ship took flight, and I scrambled away from the hole in the hull, not sure if the energy would hold me in if I touched it. As we lifted into the air, the Gak's exposed belly slithered across the hole, and I lunged forward with my sword, slashing it from one side to the other. I didn't score it deep enough to be a killing blow, but shattering glass, that felt good. The Gak finally lost its hold on the Dragonaut and went tumbling down into the water below. I blinked. We were over the water. I was once again flying in an unstable craft, though I had to admit this beat clinging to Alcatraz's back while we free fell out of the air. I climbed the rest of the way to the engine room to find Alcatraz kneeling on the floor where the engine used to be, both palms pressed against it. Streams of energy poured out of him and into the glass, and the ship bobbed as the wings lifted us higher and higher into the air.
What did you do? It doesn't have a cinematic engine anymore.
Alcatraz came as close to smiling as I'd seen since waking up in the Hybrary.
I think that I am the cinematic engine.
That should be impossible. But Alcatraz had been doing impossible things with glass for all the time I'd known him. He'd had some theory about cinematic technology working the same way as oculator magic. I doubted that he could be right, but if it got us to the World Spire and away from the murderous Gak, I'd take it. I pressed against the solid glass part of the hull, looking out at the World Spire, which was growing slowly larger on the horizon.
Bibliodend beat us there. We don't know what's waiting for us.
I know, but we're about to find out.
Alcatraz has informed me that I don't get paid more for money words. He says this is just an expression for words that are unnecessarily long and complicated. In fact, if I were being paid by the word, short words would be more lucrative because I could write more of them in less time. A librarian scheme if I've ever heard one. In that case, I will try to use short words. Very short. Tiny. Okay? We flew. Spire got big. Ship glowed. Think they saw us? Yep. They did. No good. Shot down. Glass broke. Crash. Ouch. Alcatraz now informs me that I'm not being paid by the word. Rather, I'm being paid per copy. So I have a favor to ask you. Please kindly eat your book and buy another. Thank you in advance. So there we were, sitting in the remains of the Dragonaut, now shattered into bits a second time by our crash into the World Spire. I scrambled out of the broken glass, hauling Alcatraz with me by the back of his very tattered jacket. We landed on the platform near the top of the tower, with the last stretch of the World Spire jutting sharply up in the center. Above us, around the top of the spire, was a small crow's nest with a winding staircase leading up to it. The platform around the spire stretched about 30 feet in all directions, large enough for our ship to have crash-landed without sliding off the side of the spire and landing miles below in the ocean. And also plenty of room for the librarian blimp to have landed much less dramatically. A half dozen librarians waited for us, several wearing warrior's lenses. They were led by a librarian wearing a pair of lenses with a sickly green tint. I didn't see Bibliodon anywhere, but they did have an oculator.
Orders, Etna.
Get the Kristen.
The oculator smiled.
I'll take the Smedri.
We'll see about that. I tossed the case with the lenses at Alcatraz and stepped between him and the librarians, holding my sword with both hands. That wasn't necessary. I had the grace and strength of the whole Kristen order behind me, so I didn't need two arms to swing a sword. But I looked menacing that way, and a girl can never appear too menacing. Alcatraz fumbled with the case, and I saw him retrieve the slant viewer's lenses, the tracker's lenses, and most importantly, the oculator's lenses. Good for sensing oculatora auras, and also for general defense. He put the oculator's lenses on and I grinned. Alcatraz was back. He turned toward the oculator. The other librarians charged me, and I waited until they were almost upon me to swing my sword and step to the side. I hit one of the librarians with the flat of my blade, applying enough pressure to fling her away, and reached out with one hand, picking the warrior's lenses from the face of the other. I smiled and put them on. I hadn't had a good pair of warrior's lenses since I woke up back in the library. They're one of the few pairs of lenses that can be used by non-oculators, and while my Kristen shard offers me more in the way of defensive powers, I never mind the extra boost. The librarians recovered quickly, but I dispatched them both without much effort. The other four backed up toward the center of the spire, realizing, I'm sure, that their warrior's lenses weren't going to cut it against a full Kristen. The air around me buzzed, and I looked up at the crow's nest at the top of the spire, concerned that Bibliodon might be up there, but the space was empty.
I've always wanted to duel a Smedri.
Oh no. Alcatraz stood a real chance in a battle against a Dark Oculator right now, his powers being as strong as they were. And there was still his talent, which was eluding us, but which had come to his aid when we needed it most. But an oculator's duel? It was a kind of formal fight where two oculators stood across from each other, taking turns stacking lenses and channeling power through them until one of the oculators could no longer hold off the opposing power and had to yield. Alcatraz only had three lenses, and none of them were particularly offensive, though I knew Leavenworth always said that utility lenses could be better in a duel than the more direct offensive choices if you knew how to use them. Alcatraz didn't. As far as I knew, he'd never been in an oculator's duel and had seen only one take place, between Leavenworth and Blackburn the Dark Oculator during our first library infiltration back in Book One. I turned around to find Alcatraz standing with his feet planted, looking determinedly at the Dark Oculator through his oculator's lenses.
Alcatraz, you—
Shattering glass. I couldn't announce to the Dark Oculator that Alcatraz had never done this before, though that was going to become obvious quickly. I still hadn't seen Bibliodon, and I was beginning to think he wasn't here yet. What we'd run into was a kind of vanguard coming to prepare the way, which meant we needed to deal with this Oculator, Etna they said her name was, and fast. The four remaining librarians took advantage of my distraction and chose that moment to all charge me at once. I spun and fended them off with a downward swing, then advanced, separating two from the group, and backing them up toward the edge of the tower. I cut them down and then wheeled around to face the other two. An aura of power radiated from Etna, who had raised a pair of gray lenses to her eyes. I thought those were concussor's lenses, stacking them over her first pale green set. Alcatraz stood perfectly still as a beam of white-hot power shimmered out from Etna and slammed into him. Etna lowered her hand, and the second set of lenses hovered in the air in front of her, held in place by the concentrated power that flowed between them. It was too late for me to interfere. If I did, the excess energy that was currently blocked by Alcatraz's oculator's lenses could vaporize me. There are a lot of ways this story could end, and a staggering number of them involve me being vaporized. This should be starting to alarm you. Alcatraz had his slant viewer's lenses hooked to the front of his shirt, and he began to raise his tracker's lenses to his eyes.
Not those!
Those were some of the easiest lenses to use, and therefore the least powerful in the traditional sense. They would be no use in a duel. I kept my sword out between me and the remaining librarians, backing up until I was close enough to Alcatraz that the beam of oculatory power reflecting off his lenses made my bones rattle. Technically, it was Alcatraz's turn to add a lens of his own, but when he declined to add the tracker's lenses, it gave leave for Etna to add a third pair. She smiled and pulled out a set of frosty blue Frostbringer's lenses. An icy beam of light shot through the three pairs hovering in front of Etna's face. Alcatraz took a staggered step backward, but held strong. No normal oculator could hold off so many powerful offensive lenses with only a pair of oculator's lenses, but Alcatraz wasn't a normal oculator. If he ever had been, he'd done too many impossible things to be considered one now. He might be able to do more with one pair of lenses than the dark oculator could with a dozen. A drop of sweat ran down the bridge of Alcatraz's nose. The dark oculator took a step forward, and Alcatraz took another step back. His glasses were beginning to glow slightly, and not from the defensive aura. They were overheating like the Windstormer's lenses had before Alcatraz was forced to remove them. Alcatraz didn't have long. Those lenses were going to melt on his face, burning him or becoming useless. He couldn't take them off without getting blown backward by an enormous blast of power. And even if he managed to keep them on, the Dark Oculator seemed intent on pushing Alcatraz off the World Spire, where he'd fall for miles until he slammed into the ocean. I had failed too many Smedries. I wasn't going to let that happen to Alcatraz. Not on my watch.
Alcatraz, see if you can focus some of that excess power. If you can push it through the lenses, you can use it to block the attack and use the power-up in the process.
Alcatraz's brow furrowed behind his lenses, and his eyes nearly went crossed as he focused. More sweat fell from his forehead, but the icy beam pushed back several inches.
It's your turn, Smedry. Unless you want to yield.
Shattering glass. How many pairs of offensive lenses was she going to produce? And Alcatraz only had one, the slant viewer's lenses.
Oh. Listen carefully. You're going to win this.
Alcatraz's expression faltered for a second, as if he didn't believe me. But he kept focusing his power through the lenses at Etna, which was all I needed him to do for the moment.
Use the slant viewer's lenses.
I was willing to bet that Etna hadn't figured out what those were, and so she wouldn't be expecting this. Alcatraz nodded and raised the lenses, putting them in front of the oculator's lenses and letting go hesitantly, as if expecting them to fall. Caught in the beam of power, the lenses hovered in front of his face. More power pushed through, shoving the dark oculator back.
You've got this.
The power of the dark oculator inched closer. If the dark oculator was confused about what Alcatraz was doing, she didn't show it. She reached into her pocket and withdrew a set of lenses with an autumn orange tint.
Wait, I'm not—
No, let her.
The slant viewer's lenses worked by transferring the gaze of the person you marked as a target and making it your own. At the moment, Etna's gaze was full of oculatory power. All Alcatraz had to do was harness it. And the more power the dark oculator pushed at Alcatraz, the more he would have to aim right back at her.
Mark her as your target, Alcatraz.
He gave the barest of nods and reached up to tap the slant viewer's lenses.
Okay, you'll have to look down at yourself to mark yourself. As soon as you look away, her power will start to get through, so make it quick.
Etna released the new lens, a crackle of lightning threading itself through the thrumming energy between them. More sweat slipped down his face as he focused all his energy on the dark oculator. And then he dropped his gaze, looking down at himself for the smallest of moments, and then up at the dark oculator again. Several things happened at once. The power of the dark oculator pushed through his focus. Then Alcatraz's slant viewer's lenses let him channel her own gaze back at her, including all the oculatory power she was currently forcing through it. An incredible amount of oculatory power that rippled between them. My skin began to feel like it was shrinking as the energy burned around me, and I stumbled backward, careful to avoid the edge of the platform. The remaining librarians had retreated around the spire and out of sight, probably to keep themselves from being vaporized should the duel go wrong. The energy between Alcatraz and Etna began to glow brighter and brighter as it traveled through the slant viewer's lens. and then the beams of energy between them exploded. For a terrifying second, I could hear and see nothing, and felt only the now familiar sensation of falling from an alarmingly high height as the shockwave propelled me off the top of the spire. As my vision returned, I saw four things. First, the side of the world spire, shiny and crystalline and smooth as glass. Second, Alcatraz falling not far from me. Third, the vast ocean below, rising to meet us at a speed at once too fast and too slow. And finally, there at the tops of the choppy, white-crested waves, half a dozen fins circling.
It had to be sharks.
Do something, idiot!
Alcatraz reached out with one hand and grabbed my silver hair, using it to yank me toward him.
Ouch! Not that!
Alcatraz grabbed onto my arm, and then he stretched out his other hand, still holding the slant viewer's lenses, though his other two pairs were nowhere to be seen. He twisted in the air, rolling toward the tower until his arm knocked against it. And then, as suddenly as it had begun, the falling stopped. Let's talk for a minute about luck. Whenever you see someone who has something you want, like a sword or a cage in which to house all the smedries, you might think they are lucky. Sometimes this is accurate. They may have acquired that thing with no particular effort of their own. Other times it might be because you, as an outsider, see only one small snapshot of that person's life. You don't see the training that was required for them to wield that sword effectively. You don't see the many years of carefully laid traps and plans required to trick all the smedries into a single cage at the same time. In short, when you think someone else is lucky, you may be overlooking all the effort that went into getting where they are. Luck, therefore, is a matter of perspective. You might remember that in Book 1, I wanted to be Alcatraz. You'd better remember, I explained that in this book, people. I thought he was incredibly lucky to be an Oculator and a Smedry, and have all the privileges and powers I wished I had. In some ways, it was true. Alcatraz hadn't done any work to achieve those things. He was born into them. But he would rather have been a knight who could wield a sword. Perspective is tricky that way. So, while from my perspective, what Alcatraz did when he touched the world spire might seem like luck, that luck is an illusion caused by the fact that I did not know what Alcatraz was thinking. More on that in the next chapter. Alcatraz and I stopped falling. We continued downward, but our speed slowed considerably as the air buffeted against us. The tops of the waves began to break off and float in midair like shiny amorphous blobs.
What did you do?
I think I broke gravity.
I looked up and found two librarians floating above us, others flying away from the tower at a wide angle. Bits and pieces of the glass dragon also hung in the air, flying out in all directions, but no longer plummeting toward the ground. I stared at the world spire. I stared at the ocean, where globs were floating everywhere like shining confetti for as far as I could see, which from this height was a long, long way.
Everywhere? You broke gravity everywhere?
Alcatraz looked at me sheepishly. You Hushlanders are probably doubting me now. Many of you are old enough to remember the time Alcatraz's talent broke gravity across the entire world, and the fact that you don't seems like evidence that this never happened. I will remind you that the librarians have been lying to you and changing your memories for as long as you've been alive. You know that feeling you get when you realize you've been sitting in class, staring off into space, and you've lost track of time and have no memory of what happened around you? Why do you think schools have librarians anyway? I twisted my arm in Alcatraz's and grabbed onto him, trying to pull him toward the spire. Maybe if we could grab onto it somehow, we could stop falling before we landed right on top of all those sharks.
Bestial?
Alcatraz pointed the slant viewer's lenses out across the water. I looked past a flock of birds that flailed and twisted. Beyond them in the distance, I saw something else spinning uncontrollably in the air. The Gak. I wasn't sure if it had been swimming toward us or had merely taken a leap on its island at exactly the wrong moment, but the Gak spun in gentle circles through the air, flailing its limb and searching for anything at all to hang on to as bits of ocean water glittered around it. This alone should have been enough to alarm me. But it wasn't nearly as alarming as the thing approaching us from below. A shark had angled itself up out of the water and was now careening toward us at roughly the same speed we were floating down toward it. You Hushlanders learned from Newton that an object in motion wants to stay in motion, and an object at rest wants to stay at rest. You are wrong. Objects aren't conscious and don't have the capability to want things. The only exceptions are talking rocks. This shark, on the other hand, was quite conscious and looking at me with very definite desire. By the first sands! I looked around for something, anything that was neither a shark, nor a librarian, nor a glob of ocean water. A sparkling object flew parallel to us, a few yards past my right hand. My sword! Alcatraz, help me get my sword!
You should see what you look like right now.
I glared at him. I knew what he meant. My hair was floating wildly around me like a great silver cloud. Alcatraz's hair somehow always manages to float wildly, gravity or no gravity. I shoved Alcatraz away from me as hard as I possibly could. Alcatraz circled his arms, trying to reach for me, but it was too late. I was already flying away from him in the opposite direction, directly at my sword. I smiled and reached out and grabbed it, and kept flying. I flailed in the air, I flipped a somersault, I turned a cartwheel, but without something to push against, I kept flying out over the ocean, away from the World Spire, away from Alcatraz, away from the shark that was now going to pass squarely between us, until Alcatraz bounced off the World Spire right into the path of the shark, which torpedoed toward him with its mouth wide open. I wasn't about to throw my sword, but I did pass through a large glob of ocean water containing a small school of frantically spinning fish. My free hand closed around one of the fish, and I threw it away from the spire, which slowed my momentum somewhat. A few more thrown fish gave me just enough momentum to propel myself backward into a second, larger glob of water. This one attached to a second, larger shark.
Gak!
I wrapped my arms around the shark to keep it from twisting in the air. The shark writhed and snapped its teeth, sending saltwater globs flying into my hair, which at least wetted it enough that it began floating around my head in a more cohesive manner.
Happy now, Alcatraz?
I positioned myself on the correct side of the shark and shoved with the strength of several Kristen knights. I was propelled toward Alcatraz, who was just now coming head to head, literally, with the open-mouthed shark. I twisted in the air, leading with my sword and aiming my blade downward. And then we all collided. Alcatraz, the gaping mauled shark, and me. Back on the subject of perspective, I want you to remember that I did not know what Alcatraz was thinking. At the time, I did not know he'd had what amounted to a falling out with his talent in the last book, or that it abandoned him because he insisted on blaming it for everything wrong in the world when it was only trying to help. This is what's called point of view, the thing I violated back in Chapter 8 by telling you what Alcatraz was thinking. Now, you might say I violated your trust by not telling you what Alcatraz was thinking before he broke gravity and saved us from falling into the ocean. To which I say, here's my literary license. Try to take it away from me. As we collided with the shark, my sword slipped right between its open teeth and pierced through the top of its head. The shark writhed on the end of my sword as the three of us floated next to the spire. I'd had enough of this. We were much nearer the surface of the ocean than we were the top of the tower, and as far as I could tell, there were no more librarians up there to fight. Not at this moment, anyway. All I wanted was to get my feet on some solid ground, preferably with grappler's glass to hold me there. But a girl has to take what she can get. I withdrew my sword from the head and threw the shark up into the side, propelling us with equal force toward the base of the spire. I missed, unfortunately, and we splashed into the ocean, sending the water flying in little globs up into the air as we more or less bounced off and began to ascend again. This time, though, we were close enough to the platform around the bottom of the spire that I could grab onto one of the pillars that lined the edges. I snatched Alcatraz by the hair with one hand, payback is sweet, and hooked my feet around the pillar with the other. Then I slowly climbed down, dragging Alcatraz and my sword with me as I went.
Well, how are we going to fix this?
Alcatraz locked his ankles around the pillar next to me and reached out to poke a finger into a little bit of water as it floated by.
I don't know.
Your talent worked again, though. We were falling and it saved us.
I think it had something to do with the spire.
I squinted at him. How did you know that would work?
I could see my talent. Or a reflection of it, I guess, in the crystal surface.
I gaped at him. You saw your talent? What did it look like?
Angry. I think it's mad at me.
How can a talent be mad at you? It's not a person. It's barely even a thing. Alcatraz let go of his slant viewer's lenses, and they hung in the air beside him. I reached out and grabbed them before they could float away. I felt a slight hum as I touched them. And ever so slightly, the lenses began to glow.
Bastille, what did you—
Nothing! I handed the glasses to him. I'm not an oculator. I'd wanted to be an oculator my whole life. But here's the thing about luck. Just as Alcatraz could never train and work hard enough to become a Knight of Crystallia, I would never be able to work hard enough to become an oculator. While you can work for some things, others are governed only by luck. There was no reason to imagine that could be changed. Besides, we're talking about you and your angry talent. Why is it mad at you anyway?
The power of the Incarna is building up now that the talents aren't releasing the pressure a bit at a time. And it's done strange things to my oculatory abilities, so maybe you—
No. Alcatraz extended the lenses to me.
Take off your warrior's lenses and put them on.
Shut up, or I'll throw them in the ocean.
Bastille?
Let me be clear that I knew Alcatraz was about to argue with me that I was being stupid, that I had seen and done some pretty incredible things since waking up in the Hybrary, and I shouldn't rule out that being an oculator was one of those things. Instead, mid-sentence, Alcatraz's demeanor changed entirely. His eyes narrowed. He stared right at me.
You again. This is all your fault.
I felt like he'd stab me with my own sword. What? I'm not the one who—
Not you.
Alcatraz grabbed my warrior's lenses right off my face. He held them in front of him, staring at his own reflection. Shattering glass. We were not going through that again. Look, I don't see what difference it makes whose fault it is.
What?
Alcatraz dropped the slant viewer's lenses.
You think you can just abandon me and then pop back up in my life and destroy gravity? Where have you been anyway?
I stared at Alcatraz. He stared at his reflection. The slant viewer's lenses floated in the air between us. I reached out and took them again so they wouldn't float away. And when I did, they began to hum once more. Alcatraz? He was too busy staring at his own reflection in the warrior's lenses. At this point, I had two choices. I could convince myself that both Alcatraz and I had lost our minds, and perhaps were actually drowning in the ocean right now, rather than clinging to the base of the world spire. Or I could admit that something very strange was going on with Alcatraz and his talent, and me and his lenses. I really didn't want to have lost my mind. I'm rather partial to it. So instead, I took a deep breath, put on the slant viewer's lenses, looked at Alcatraz, and tapped them. I could feel the power in them even before I looked at the warrior's lenses and tapped them again. My vision shifted so abruptly that I hugged the pillar to stay upright. Staring through the lenses at Alcatraz's reflection, I could see the warrior's lenses as if they were held in my own hands, exactly as Alcatraz saw them. But the reflection? It was no longer Alcatraz. It looked like him, but the eyes were darker, meaner. His whole demeanor sullen and angry. Kind of like Alcatraz that time I took pictures of him wearing a tunic. In my shock, I nearly forgot I was currently wearing and using lenses that were generally restricted to oculators.
What is that?
My talent. The thing that destroyed everything.
But it didn't. You said the talents were siphoning off the energy of the Incarna. They're what's kept all of us from burning up, right? It was only trying to help.
Alcatraz stared at the reflection. And the reflection stared angrily back.
We need to bring back the talents. Bibliodan hasn't arrived yet. If you had your talent, you'd be better able to fight against him. And if the others had theirs, they might be able to—
It abandoned me. If I hadn't broken the talents, then my grandfather would have arrived late to the bullet. He would still be alive. I could have broken that altar or the power that Bibliodan used to make the Bloodforge lens from my father's soul. I hate my talent. It's what caused all of this.
That doesn't make any sense, Alcatraz. Either it could have saved your grandfather and it abandoned you when you needed it, or it's a terrible thing that has always ruined your life. But it can't be both. This is not true, of course. something can be both the bane of your existence and your favorite thing in the world. Just look at my relationship with Al. The Talon shook its head at us.
You didn't help. My grandfather died and so did my father, and you didn't do anything.
The Talon pointed out at the ocean as if to say, yes, but you didn't get eaten by sharks.
It's right, Alcatraz. We didn't die by plummeting into the ocean, and we didn't get eaten alive. We got to the World Spire even though we shouldn't have been able to reach it before Biblioden did. It saved us. Twice.
And a lot more times than that, before I went into a coma. The Talon nodded, gesturing to the side as if to say, yeah, listen to her. Alcatraz shook his head.
I don't know how to fix gravity. I don't know how to bring the Talons back. I don't fix things, I only break them.
For a moment, the three of us simply looked at each other.
Maybe you should start by saying you're sorry?
Alcatraz turned and glared at me. I could see him out of the sides of my lenses.
What? Would it kill you to try?
Because you're so good at apologizing?
I am great at apologizing. I'm even better at never needing to.
I'm not going to apologize to my Talent.
The Talent rolled its eyes, folded its arms, and began to brood like a sparkly vampire.
Fine. We'll just hang out here until Biblioden figures out how to fly his ship without gravity, and then we'll face him with nothing but my sword and a pair of slant viewer's lenses, instead of having help from the Breaking Talent, the most powerful talent the world has ever known. Sounds great. I bet the ending of this book is going to be even better than the last one.
Hooray for irony. Alcatraz hung his head, a mirror of his own reflection. I was trying to figure out where to put my sword to free up my punching hand when Alcatraz blurted out,
I'm sorry.
The Talon's head snapped up.
I'm sorry I blamed you. I used to feel like the need to break things built up in me over time, and if I didn't let it out, I would break bigger, more important things. More impressively, more destructively, more and more, and I couldn't make it stop, but you were doing what Alcatraz the First made you for. You were trying to send that energy somewhere so that all the Free Kingdomers could live. And over time, I figured out how to direct the energy. I figured out how to break things for the greater good.
Alcatraz shook his head.
Without you, I'm nothing. I failed to stop Biblioden from killing my father. I'm a coward, and I know that's why you left me.
That's not true. You're a hero, even without the talent.
No, I'm a failure. I'm sorry, Bastille. I'm sorry I didn't recognize the talents for what they were, and I'm sorry I can't use them now.
Alcatraz closed his eyes, and the talent smiled.
Hey, I think it worked.
Ouch!
We both fell on our behinds onto the wooden steps at the bottom of the World Spire. All around us, great globs of ocean and fish and kelp and sharks went splashing down, followed by bits of glass from the Dragonaut and parts of the Librarian blimp. The pillar Alcatraz was holding fractured, and I barely rolled out of the way as the rubble crumbled around us, shards of it scattering into the sea, where the waves slowly began to form normally again.
You broke the pillar! You have your talent back!
Alcatraz unburied himself from the pillar's rubble, looking both shocked and unsure. I thrust the slant viewer's lenses at him, and he tucked them into his pocket.
I have my talent back. The talents! Are they all fixed?
We waited as if for a sign, which was stupid, because Alcatraz was the only Smedri present, and it wasn't as if I was suddenly going to develop a Smedri talent. For a moment, nothing happened.
Alcatraz!
Both Alcatraz and I turned to see him running toward us.
You did it! You fixed the talents! I was so surprised when I got lost just now and arrived here so quickly. My talent is being even more cooperative than usual.
Alcatraz looked uncertain for a moment, and then he smiled at my warrior's lenses.
Thanks.
Kaz, where are Folsom and Himalaya and my mother?
We escaped to a safe house. They're quite all right. But I have even better news. Guess who I found on the way here?
Leapin' Levin's boy!
Alcatraz and I were both startled to see Grandpa Smedri himself running toward us from behind Kaz, grinning from ear to ear.
You did it!
Grandpa? I thought you were...
Ted?
Leavenworth had an oversized hunk of gauze duct-taped to the bridge of his nose, and he seemed to be having a hard time seeing around it. Kaz grabbed him by the elbow to keep him from stumbling off into the ocean.
Wrestling readies. It'll take a lot more than this bullet to kill me. Now, where's your father, Alcatraz? Were you able to stop Biblioden?
Kaz's face fell. Alcatraz took a step back, bits of crystal pillar crumbling under his shoes. Leavenworth looked at him with a big, happy smile, with no idea what news he was about to receive. It has been brought to my attention that because some of you didn't find the note I left at the end of the fifth volume of this series, you aren't fully aware of what happened to Leavenworth. For those of you who may have missed it, let me fill you in. Leavenworth, while no one knew it, did manage to call out to his broken talent before the bullet reached his brain, because of desperation and loyalty and magic and stuff. Oh, forget it. I'm going to let him tell it.
Grandpa, how did you survive?
Alcatraz looked like he was caught between disbelief that his grandfather was alive, pure joy that his grandfather was alive, and horror at the news he was about to tell him. He was obviously trying to put off telling his grandfather the truth, but many of you have the same question about Leavenworth's survival, so for the moment your needs align. It was bound to happen sooner or later.
Talents are slippery things. You may have broken it, but it couldn't abandon me at a moment like that. I arrived late at the bullet and came to on the floor at the library just in time to arrive late to a flood of magma, though I was still trapped there until Kazan got lost and found me. How did you do it? How did you fix the talents?
I apologized to them.
Persnickety Pierces, boy. Nothing fixes things like a good apology. Well done, boy. Well done indeed.
It must have been an impressive apology. One step and I was there with my father, and another step and we were both here. Maybe you should apologize more often.
No.
Both Leavenworth and Kaz looked at him in surprise. Alcatraz appeared to choke on his own words, and then shook his head and started again.
No, Grandpa, I didn't do well. I failed. We didn't stop Biblioden. He killed my father and used him to make a blood-forged lens to channel the power of the Incarna into everyone in the Free Kingdoms, to burn them up. And I don't know how to stop it.
Leavenworth blinked, taking that in. He'd been worried before that Attica might have perished, but he'd never been confronted so squarely with the certainty of his son's death. Kaz looked down at his feet, almost as if he felt guilty for not having broken the news himself, though he'd only been with Leavenworth a few seconds longer than we had.
No, boy, you didn't fail. There's nothing you could have done to stop him from killing your father.
Alcatraz pressed his lips together.
Biblioden gave me a choice. He said I could choose who he killed, and I chose Dad. It's my fault he's dead.
Leavenworth shook his head again.
Ah, my boy.
No, don't tell me it's not my fault. You weren't there, Grandpa. You didn't watch him die.
That's true, lad.
As he spoke, I could see Alcatraz's shoulders hunching, his eyebrows drawing together, his eyes narrowing like the image of the talent. Leavenworth meant well, but he was undoing all the progress Alcatraz had made.
And I'm sorry you had to be there to see that, but...
Smedries! All three of them looked at me in surprise, which gave me a second to collect myself, because I hadn't thought much past yelling that first word. This sentimentality will have to be postponed, preferably indefinitely, but at least until after we get to the top of the spire and stop Biblioden from destroying us all. Okay?
Pastille, I think Alcatraz needs...
She's right. You all need to save the world, and I'm only getting in the way.
No. You are going to help us save the world if I have to drag you by your ear.
Alcatraz turned, his wrath now focused on me.
Shut up, Bastille. You weren't there either. You don't know what it was like.
I don't know if it was Alcatraz's words or his talent that did it, but at that moment, something inside of me broke. Not my patience, as I had already lost that in Chapter 8. No, what broke was my bravado, the facade I used to keep myself from crumbling while there was still a world to save. Alcatraz was right. I wasn't there, and I'm his shattering Kristen Knight, and I should have been. Whatever Alcatraz saw in my face at that moment, it was enough to give him pause. His anger faded slightly, and he opened his mouth, probably to say something else irrevocably hurtful and stupid. So I did the only thing I could think of. I punched him.
Ow! That hurt!
So did what you said, you idiot!
Bastille, Alcatraz, I don't think...
Fine! I'm done talking about my father, and I'm done talking about my feelings, and I'm done trying to save the stupid world when I'm clearly not the one it wants to save it.
And then he stalked off around the world spire in the direction Kaz and Leavenworth had come from.
I'm not going to write a chapter introduction here. If you want one, too bad. Helping you understand the intricacies of human emotion is not nearly as important as taking care of my friend who had just stormed off. I wasn't about to let Alcatraz wander off alone and get eaten by a stray shark. I moved to follow after Alcatraz.
Bastille, perhaps we should give him a moment.
We don't have a moment. We got here ahead of Biblioden, but we don't know by how much, and we need to prepare to stop him. So why don't you two get lost and come back with something useful for once? I stalked after Alcatraz before Kaz could object that he had, the moment he got his talent back. I was in no mood to argue, and I wasn't going to give Alcatraz any more moments to wallow in his misery and self-loathing. He'd had enough. I found Alcatraz slumped on the platform between the spire and the sea, next to several broken shards of a potted plant that must have gotten overturned when gravity broke. Down the way, I could see the edge of the small city at the base of the spire, where researchers lived while they studied the tower. The buildings looked mostly intact, though the platform around them was littered with overturned vehicles, a few flopping fish, and several very disoriented-looking birds.
Go away, Bastille.
No, I will not go away until you admit that what happened to your father isn't your fault.
That's not going to happen.
Why not?
Because it is my fault.
No, it isn't. Alcatraz climbed to his feet and faced me.
Why not?
Because it's mine.
What?
It's my fault.
Bastille, you were in a coma.
Which I wouldn't have been if I hadn't taken that incredible risk in the battle in Mokia. It's my job to protect you Smedries. Whose job was it to keep Attica alive? Not yours. Smedries cause problems and get themselves into danger, and Knights of Crystallia keep them from getting their stupid selves killed. That's how it works, Alcatraz. I switched my sword to my offhand and punched him in the arm again. I expected him to yell at me, tell me I was wrong. But instead, he merely winced and cradled his arm. So you were right. I punched him again. I wasn't there. I should have been there to keep Leavenworth from getting shot. I should have been there to keep you from getting tied to that altar. I should have been there to keep Attica from dying. You didn't fail, Alcatraz. I did.
Bastille.
Alcatraz reached out and put a hand on each of my arms, probably to keep me from punching him again now that I consider it. At the time, all I could think about was how close Alcatraz's face was, his eyes staring into mine. I felt a flush climb slowly up my body and settle in my cheeks. I tried to pull away, but Alcatraz held on tight.
Bastille, you didn't fail. You're the only reason we've gotten this far.
Now he was looking at me with concern. I meant to shout at him to leave me alone, to break away and stalk off the way he did to me. But instead, I did something very, very stupid. Yes, Alcatraz, I admit that it happens. I probably should have set that last paragraph apart on its own page, because Alcatraz is going to want to frame it. But I don't like to make things easy for him. I kissed him. Alcatraz's lips went soft in surprise. I took a step back in horror, and we stared at each other. My skin burned from head to toe, and Alcatraz's face turned a deep shade of crimson. I turned on my heels and ran. When I returned to the spot where I'd left Kaz and Leavenworth, they were gone. Lost, probably. I hope they made it count, because we were still at the bottom of the enormous world spire with only two pairs of lenses, my sword, and the breaking talent. I scanned the skies, but there was still no sign of Biblioden. I set down my sword, curled my arms around my knees, and glared at the ocean.
Bastille would never admit it, but I saw her. She cried.
This was not the first time I'd failed as a knight, but it was definitely the first time I felt I'd failed as a person. The Smedries weren't just my responsibility, they were my friends. When they weren't driving me crazy, I truly cared about them. Okay, maybe I still care about them when they are driving me crazy, which is good for them because that's most of the time. What I'd said to Alcatraz was true. I should have been there to save Leavenworth from the bullet that will someday reach his brain. I should have been there to save Attica from dying on that altar of outdated encyclopedias. But most of all, I should have been there to protect Alcatraz from ever having to answer Biblioden's stupid question about who should die. From having to face that all alone. I felt more than guilty. I felt ashamed. And now I'd gone and kissed him, and he was going to think I had all kinds of mushy feelings for him. Even worse, I did have mushy feelings. There, I said it. Are you happy now? And okay, fine, I cried. Daintily and with a quiet inner strength. Challenge me on that, Al. I dare you. As I sat there, I did the same thing Alcatraz had been doing. I leaned into arrogance and took credit for things beyond my control. There is one simple reason why. Arrogance is easier. Arrogance is safer. Because if the terrible thing that happened is all your fault, there's still the chance that you'll be able to stop future terrible things from happening. Sometimes blaming yourself feels better than admitting that the fate of the world may be out of your control. When Alcatraz approached, he did so slowly with great trepidation, which was probably smart, since I had a big crystal sword. I didn't look at him. I couldn't. I'd made a complete fool out of myself. And maybe worse, I'd failed him. Alcatraz sat down beside me.
It's not your fault, Estelle. And it's not mine either.
Happy as I was that he was finally willing to admit that, I didn't know what to say. I'd kissed him. My lips touched his lips. My cheeks felt like a bale dragon had taken up residence in my face. And then Alcatraz reached over and took my hand in his. His skin was soft and warm, and his fingers curled naturally against mine. He stole a glance at me at the same time I stole a glance at him, and his cheeks were still as bright a red as I'm sure mine were. Idiot. But I didn't let go of his hand.